everybody. Welcome to the Hallmarkies podcast. We're really excited today. We have one of the friends of the podcast on for a special bonus episode that we're doing. And I'm film critic Rachel Wagner, and I have my favorite film critic also here. Alonzo Duralde is here on the podcast. And thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So have you had a good holiday season?
It's been a little nuts, you know. This was one of those late Thanksgiving years that really just kind of like cuts into your season. And, you know, of course, I've also learned the hard way. If you want to have a relaxing December, don't write a book about Christmas movies.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because you had Christmas Con and the Christmas Land Convention.
And I've been talking to every podcast that will have me, so, you know.
Right. Well, and yeah, obviously, Hallmark hasn't been super helpful in reducing our work.
Oh, indeed not. Well, although they did shave it down to 39 movies, apparently, without telling anybody. So.
I know. So bizarre. So bizarre. but how do you feel as far as the movies that we've seen, how do you feel like the season has been for Hallmark and then just kind of Christmas movies in general? Do you feel like it's been better than last year or not as good? Or,
well, I mean, they're really blasting us with material this year. I mean, everybody in general, I think, you know, the Hallmark formula has worked out so well that other people are trying to kind of hop on that bandwagon. And I think even Hallmark is having a hard time keeping up with its own level of success. I don't know. I it's hard for me to know if the movies aren't as good this year or if I'm just getting a little fried on the formula. I mean, I think I've seen one of my favorite ones ever this year, which was Two Turtle Doves.
Yeah.
That felt like a movie that I actually wanted to traffic in human emotion and deeper feelings than we usually get from these movies. But for the most part, they just feel like, you know, they're kind of, the formula is starting to wear a little thin, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair. I think we got one really funny one and one really touching one. I mean, I others that I really liked, but I feel like across the board, almost everybody likes Two Turtle Doves and the Merry Christmas movie one.
Which one was that?
The up one. My brain.
Christmas movie. Christmas.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So yeah,
You know, like I think there's some interesting stuff coming out of Netflix. I think some of the own ones were okay. Like I thought the one with Kimberly Elise. Thank you. Yes, I thought that was pretty charming.
Their first one was rough.
Yes,
but then they were better.
the other two were definitely better. Yeah, so like, I mean, I'm glad that more people are taking a stab at it. Obviously, I think when you've got Owen and BET in the mix, it means we're definitely going to get more leads of color, which is great.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing Lifetime making little tentative, like, hey, here's a B couple who are like two dudes who are married, and they're going to get the fleeting kiss at the end of the movie. You know, like,
right.
These are. You know, great. Welcome to 1995, but I'll take it, you know.
Right.
And then obviously, you know, this past weekend's Hallmark kerfuffle, I think, is really going to sort of open up the conversation about what are we showing in these movies? Who are we including and what stories are we telling? So I am very curious to see where all that goes.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be an adventure. It's a Hallmark podcaster. And of course, I loved Claus. This year, it's one of my favorite movies of the whole year. I just absolutely loved it.
Yeah, I there's a lot that I liked about it. You're a little more into it than me, but I totally endorse this kind of thing. If Netflix is going to get into this, I liked Let It Snow quite a bit too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's nice that they're making stuff for younger people. These movies have always been so for. You know, we joke with our co-host Amy that there's never anything for young college kids like her. So that was fun for them. And I actually liked the Turkey Drop movie. I thought it was funny.
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you didn't see it? Yeah, Cheryl Hines is, you know, she's super funny.
Oh, she's great. Yeah, no, you're right. I think the Hallmark is so sort of targeted in that demographic where it's always like early. They seem to always sort of be in their early 30s, you know. And then, of course, the women playing their mothers are 45.
Right, yeah.
They don't sort of go after, like, here's a movie that's about, like, you know, a widowed grandmother finding love again. Or here's a movie about, like, a college sophomore who just broke up with her boyfriend before the holidays. Like, yeah, there are different ways to go with this stuff. And so if more people are making them, then I think we're going to see more people kind of tweaking the formula and tweaking the idea of what these movies can be. And I hope that Hallmark doesn't get left behind. I hope they realize that they have to meet the challenge of other folks in all the stripes of demographic that they're covering. Mm-hmm.
I think so. Yeah. And I watched the Feast of Seven Fishes off your recommendation. And that was really fun. If people don't want to break from the saccharine versions of Christmas movies, I think it's a good choice. Not that it's like super raunchy or anything in that way at all. It's just a different style.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a very kind of charming indie comedy that also happens to be a fun Christmas movie.
Yeah, I think so. So yeah, that's really interesting. We're almost done as of the recording of this podcast. Yes. Almost done. I'm so happy. But that's not why we're here today. So we are here to talk about the new version of Little Women that's opening on Christmas Day, and I thought it would be fun to rank four different versions of Little Women and to talk about it. Was this a novel that you read growing up at all, or was something
I've actually still never read it. I've seen all these movie versions of it, and I have it on my phone now, and I've started it, but I have not gotten all the way through. But I kind of feel like it's weird. Like, if you watch enough Christmas carols, you pretty much get everything that's in the story. You know, like, this version will have, you know, ignorance and want in it, and that version will have, like, the people in the lighthouse. Like, every bit of the book, somebody eventually brings it to the screen. So, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I kind of feel like at some point, all of the nuggets that occur in the novel, somebody has put into a movie, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that there's less sort of creative interpretation with this compared to Christmas Carol. Like, there's way more variety in Christmas Carol. But yeah, I mean, I have to admit, I get a little nitpicky when it comes to, excuse me. I get a little nitpicky when it comes to Little Women, because it's really an important book for me, because it was the first book that I was ever, like, super proud of finishing. Like, I read this big book. Look at this.
It's
so
got
exciting.
Chapters.
Yeah. And, and just being so connected to the story of the sisters. Growing up, my parents kind of joke that my parents went in two batches. you burn the first batch, then you try again, because there's sort of two groups of us. And
interesting.
But as a little girl, I just had one sister, and then as a teenager, I ended up, and then now I have three sisters. So it's kind of unique. But anyway, I still was very, very close with my sister, and so I definitely related to the sisters, and of course, I think everybody wants to be Joe when you're reading the book. You're like, I'm totally Joe.
Right.
You don't want to be any of the other ones. And so I can get a little nitpicky when it comes to this story, because I just love it. And I was curious, from your perspective, why do you think that this is one of the stories that just remains relevant in every era, it seems like, since it's been published?
Well, it's funny. I was just watching, they were showing the 33 version on TCM, and they introed it with Alicia Malone talking to Greta Gerwig, who wrote and directed the one that we're talking about, that's coming out on Christmas. And Greta Gerwig talked about how, like, you know, there's this ongoing thing of the marches feeling sort of frustrated by what the society they're living in allows women to do, or to be, or to think, or to say. And I think that sadly, that is something that hasn't gone away. I think that every generation of woman in this country sort of feels like they are being held back because of decorum and societal expectations and, you know, institutional sexism and that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I think that, you know, even though this is a book that is set in the late 19th century, if you are a woman with opinions or a woman who wants to, you know, be creative or, you know, like all these sort of things, these characters still are completely speaking your language and are, you know, you can empathize with them and see how it applies to yourself. I mean, again, this is, I'm a dude, I'm it's an outside take, but that's sort of, I think that was something that Greta Gerwig pointed out, and I think that it totally makes sense.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that we all have, well, not, we don't all have siblings, obviously, but we all have families. And so
sure.
you can relate to sort of the dynamic of it's the sort of day-to-day life of these, in many ways, it's sort of an idealized version of family life. And, and particularly, I think we'll talk about Marmee, but I think that Marmee is like the perfect mother.
Sure. And,
you know,
and, but you're right. The sisters have each other's back, you know, and I think that there is that, they're getting through this together. They're getting through this tough time of the war and their father's absence and, you know, their relative poverty and all that stuff because they are there for each other. And so that's something that's really appealing and cozy for a reader. And I think also because the sisters are so different, even though, yeah, we all might think of ourselves as the Joe, like we've all got a bit of all of them
in
us. And I think, you know, if you're being honest with yourself, you'd be like, well, I guess really I'm more of a Meg, or I'm kind of an Amy sometimes,
right.
You know.
Well, and also I do think you kind of, you probably, at least as a little girl, I was probably sort of thinking, oh, well, cause my sister's name is Meg.
Oh,
and
funny.
You know, so, but you know, you think, oh, she's being like Amy. She's being like, you know, she's being unreasonable. How could she do that? And Beth, the whole Beth character is so, is such a classic kind of tragic
right
character. There's a lot of classic melodrama kind of in her character.
Yeah, she's the little Nell of this novel. Mm-hmm. You know, like she's just there to die, and so it's like, yeah. You know, she's the most noble and the kindest and the, you know, like she, yeah, there are no flaws for her. She's you know, she's just there to be saintly and then expire.
Yeah. And I remember as a little girl just crying. This was the saddest thing to ever happen. And it's interesting because when you think about Louisa May Alcott's era, mm-hmm. when she was writing, you think of compared to your Dickens and your other kind of writers at the time. Like, I mean, I was a little bit later, but still. I love Christmas Carol, I love Dickens, many of others' his novels, but his women tend to be not the best.
Right, yes. There weren't a lot of women writing in that at that point, and you're right, I think a lot of, there weren't a lot of female characters to take seriously, and I think that's why the book had such an immediate sensation among, you know, there's that whole story about the publisher didn't think much of it, but then his daughters all devoured it and wanted to know what happened next, you know. And I think for, you know, obviously times are different and there are a lot of different sort of role models and characters to look to. But, you know, these are women who are making the most of what their opportunities are in this, you know, specific era. And they, I think, allow the part of the familial bond is they are able to be the most themselves with each other. So, like, even when they're sort of scolding Joe for being a tomboy or, you know, getting on Amy for putting on airs or whatever, there is this ultimate feeling of, like, I can be the person I am in front of the three of you, and it's okay. And I may have to, like, switch it up when I go out in the world. I may have to tone it down, you know, in school or in church or in other sort of societal settings. But here at home, you know, we can put our plates on in the living room and we can, like, call each other out for our faults. But knowing that at the end of the day, you know, we love each other and we are there to take care of each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. All right. Well, let's talk about the first version that we're, there's other versions. There's a silent movie version. There's, but we just picked four yes. that we wanted to talk about. And so we're going to start with the 1933 version.
Yes.
So this is directed by George Cukor. And it stars Katharine Hepburn as Jo. And then it has Joan Bennett as Amy. And did you know that she was actually pregnant the whole time this movie was being made?
Oh my gosh, I didn't, but I guess those dresses are good for something.
and then Frances D as Meg and Jean Parker as Beth. And the one thing I will fault all of these movies on is I really wish that we could have a version of Little Women that's actually starring Little Women, like, that's not starring 20-year-olds. Like, it would be, I think it would be nice. I mean, you can say that about a lot of teenage movies, of course, but I think sure. that would be cool if one day we get, like, a true.
Well, I think that then forces you to do what they do with Amy in the 94 version, not to get too far ahead, where you'd have to double cast everybody because
that's fair.
They do transition from, like, teenage to early adulthood. So, you know, you're right. That would be an interesting approach, but I think sometimes you lose something. You know, there are cases, I think, where you've got, like, two actresses who sort of seamlessly give one performance, you know, I don't know if you've seen The Irishman yet, but, Anna Paquin and then I think Anna Galina is her name, who plays the same character as a child. They have a similar intensity and it feels like they're passing a baton really well, but that's the exception and not the rule. I think a lot of times when you have a young actress and then an older actress coming in, you know, it throws off the vibe a little.
I'm definitely a fan of the two Amy's choice. I think I like that about the 94. We'll talk about that later, but sure. I really like that. But yeah, I mean, it's true. It is a little bit risky.
Yeah.
To do that. But anyway, so this is pretty standard as far as your Little Women story. I mean, they have your Christmas scenes, they have your romances, you've got Lori. I think that Lori and Marmee, I think, are the two hardest characters to cast. Because I especially think Lori is hard because you can't make him too charming because then you're mad at Joe. And then but you can't make him too awkward and weird because then
why is anybody finding appealing?
Yeah, why is anybody?
and he always has that arc where he has to kind of go from being, like, boyishly eager to a bit of a sallow drunk to then a, you know, more kind of reformed, you know, put together for adult. You know, I think this movie sort of, like, we'll put a mustache on him and we'll know that he's now a grown up. You know.
Yeah, I hate the Lori in this one. I think he's terrible.
He's not my favorite.
No, but what's your overall thoughts on this one?
You know, this is, I think, very much in the you can spy the early talkiness about it. You know, there's the camera, it doesn't do a whole lot that's interesting. I think Hepburn's performance is occasionally, I think Hepburn's performance is occasionally a little broad, especially when she's sort of playing up the butcher aspects of Joe. So like she'll suddenly, her voice will get really deep. And I'm not even talking about like when she's doing the stage production. I mean, like when they're talking about like, you know, I'm not afraid of him, you know, the neighbor in his carriage. And it's just sort of like, okay, take it down a little, you know, which is weird because there's actually at least one contemporary biographer who posits the notion that Katharine Hepburn might have been trans. But then you see her play these roles where she is required to be either a tomboy or like in Sylvia Scarlett, where she is literally an actress who is trying to pass herself off as a boy. And I think she kind of overplays it a little. And I don't, you know, one could read any number of things into that. But, you know, I think for a lot of the performance, she's great. And she definitely sort of typifies the character's energy and her drive. So, you know, I think for the most part, like the four sisters are pretty good. I just saw Jean Parker in this odd little Christmas movie that I'd never seen before called Beyond Tomorrow. That's worth checking out. I think it's on Amazon Prime. But, you know, it's made with a certain sense of definitely affection for the material. And Sarah Mason, who wrote the screenplay, you know, did a lot of kind of legendary, like she wrote Meet Me in St. Louis, you know, she wrote the original version of Magnificent Obsession. And, you know, she did the first movie of Split Dallas. So she's a Hollywood trooper. And I think really kind of streamlines the action pretty well. And doesn't maybe pick all of the highlights of what we would expect in an adaptation. But I think for the most part, it works.
Yeah. I mean, I really like Katharine Hepburn in this. Like she, I feel like captures this sort of spirit of Joe probably the most to me as far as just, I don't know. I just feel like she's, that tomboyishness like is the most kind of accurate to the character in the book. And so I really like her in this role. And I hate the Professor Bear. I think he's terrible. I think he's such a fuddy-duddy. And he's another hard one to cast, but he feels so much older than her. And I know he is older than her, but still, I just hate him. He's terrible.
Yeah, he does. Professor Bear doesn't get sexy in the movies until decades later.
Yeah, he's the worst. I'm like, oh no. So the men in this one are all fails to me.
Right. Well, you know, Cukor was sort of legendary as a women's director, and it was not uncommon back then when you would have like a sort of strong female protagonist that they would intentionally cast men who were not going to threaten them in any way, you know? So you look at like a lot of the old Betty Davis or Joan Crawford movies, and they're cast opposite these people like George Brent or French O'Tone or, you know, Zachary Scott, who were not like, you know, occasionally they would face off with like Bogart or Clark Gable or something. But for the most part, they got these kind of second tier kind of wishy-washy dudes. And I think this movie sort of pursues that avenue.
Yeah. So we know the iconic scene in Little Women, of course, the Christmas won't be Christmas without any presents, and then them giving their breakfast away. But do you think that it's a stretch to call Little Women a Christmas movie? I know it's the big topic.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm pretty liberal with my definition of what a Christmas movie is. You know, people will ask you, oh, well, is this a Christmas movie or is that a Christmas movie? And I'll, well, if you think so, sure. You know,
yeah.
I've had people this year say, well, is Hustlers a Christmas movie? Because it has that big Christmas scene in it. And I'm like, if you want to think of it that way, sure. I mean, you know, yeah. I've christened a movie a Christmas movie for less, you know. I think that it keeps coming back in these movies, you know, where you've got like the whole opening sequence where they're taking the breakfast to the Hummels. You also have in a lot of them where they really do up the gift of the piano, you know. So I think, yes, I feel like that it's enough of a touchstone in this movie, even if it's not constantly Christmas. The Christmas sequences within it are so important and so memorable and so moving that absolutely I would rank it as such. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
You?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's enough to have just even that those scenes are so iconic. And of course their dad comes home during another Christmas and
right.
So it's enough for me for sure. But yeah, I mean this one it's pretty standard as far as, like I said, you hit all the major beats and yeah, it's fun. I like it. And I just like Katherine Hepburn's energy in the role. Mm. I think she's really, real fun. It might be a little over top at some points, but I think that's the strength of this movie to me is her.
Sure. Her I do like it. I like Edna Mae Oliver's Aunt March quite a bit too.
Yeah. All right. Well, so where do you have this in your ranking?
Oh, I would say of the four that we're talking about, I would put it third.
Yeah, same. Same with me. All right. We're going to talk about the 1949 version. And I didn't realize until this viewing that this is the same script and the same music as the 1933 film.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah,
oh,
at least. Yeah, which is kind of interesting. They took it directly the same. And I'm curious to know your thoughts about this one because I've read different things online, but I think this one is fine, but oh. I think that Elizabeth Taylor is so ridiculous in this movie. I mean, playing this young girl, she just looks bizarre, really, like especially next to Margaret O'Brien, who's supposed to be older than her. It just looks ridiculous to me.
Well, I mean, Elizabeth Taylor was 17 at the time, so like she was womanly, but she was still a teenager. Yes. I mean, do they try and fake it to where like Beth is now the youngest in this one?
Or, it must be. I don't think they ever say that, but I think in this one and the 2019 one, I think they both seem like that Beth is the youngest.
Right. This is a very MGM movie. And like, I love the MGM musicals of this period, obviously, like they are some of the greatest films ever made, but a lot of their non-musicals of the 40s and 50s had a certain, I don't know, kind of this sheen to them that was not always interesting. You know, like if you look at the Three Musketeers with Gene Kelly, where they've clearly spent more time making sure that everybody's outfit was a different shade so that it would look pop in Technicolor more than it being like a sort of rousing adventure film. This movie feels a little bit canned, you know, and I mean part of that is June Allison just being June Allison, bless her heart, like she just she's a very much like, you know, a matter of taste kind of performer. And there are films I like her in, but in this one, I find her a little much. Margaret O'Brien is great. Like she is, you know, she always talks about being like, that she and June Allison apparently used to compete to like, who was the best crier at MGM. Like that was their wheelhouse. And so, you know, she really pours it on as Beth, and I think it works really well. I think Janet Leigh is fine as Meg. Peter Lawford is an okay Laurie. But overall, like this movie just sort of feels safe. Like this is the version that you would watch in English class and be like, maybe I'll read this book, maybe I won't, you know. But it is not without its appeal. It definitely, like, you know, I think one of the upsides of the MGM thing is like they put a lot into the production, you know, so it has a certain sense of grandeur, even though obviously the Marches are mostly growing up in poverty, so you don't want to glamorize that too much. But it's okay. What's your take?
I think that's fair. I just really struggle with it. Because a lot of people are saying, we're saying online that Elizabeth Taylor's the highlight of this movie. And I'm like, she looks ridiculous. She's going to grade school. She's like getting, I don't know. I just think she, in particular, and her styling and just everything, it's just like, what is going on? she sticks out so much to me in this movie as just like,
it's also it's hard to watch Elizabeth Taylor in context because like what 1949 audiences saw in her, obviously, like she had, you know, she had grown up in before their eyes, you know, she was one of those kind of child stars where, you know, she'd already done National Velvet and all that stuff, so I think people thought of her as somebody they were watching grow up, and we're looking at it from a kind of post Cleopatra, post, you know, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf filter where she's like Elizabeth Taylor, megastar, you know? And so I think that might throw off the balance.
Yeah. But I like Peter Lawford as Laurie. I think that works real well. And he to me is one of the better Laurie's if I had to pick. Sure. I think he's good. And I think that they do a good job in this one with like the theatrics. I think there's fun, even if it is the same script. I don't know. I just I like the way they stage Joe's little plays, and some of that stuff is fun.
Is it entirely the same script? Like, I don't remember. Does the 33 version have them all going to the store? Because they really make a big scene out of that one in the 49.
I mean,
they do the Christmas shopping.
I don't know. According to Wikipedia, is the script and music taken directly from the 1933. There's another author on here.
I said the credit of the screenwriter. The original was RKO and this was MGM. So, like, it's not like it was that they already owned it or whatever. So.
Yeah, but they credit Sarah Mason and Victor Herman as a screenwriter. So, yeah, there might be a few different scenes. I mean, it's obviously the same book, so they're going to be very similar. But anyway, you know, you never know about Wikipedia, but that's what they say.
Sure.
But it's kind of interesting. And so, yeah, this one, I also really like the Mary Astor as Marmee. I feel
she's
like
she's terrific.
Yeah, I feel like she gets that kind of nurturing, perfect mother down the most of she's my favorite Marmee.
It's interesting. I think she's a great actress because, like, you know, in a movie like this or in Meet Me in St. Louis, yeah, she is, like, totally, like, maternal and caring. And, you know, you just want to be enveloped by her. But then you can see her, like, in The Maltese Falcon where she is, like, the dame who's trouble. Or in a movie like The Palm Beach Story where she's hilarious and just, like, biting as this sort of, like, you know, jaded socialite. So she can do everything.
Yeah, yeah. So, where do you have this one ranked?
I got to say, this is my fourth of four. Yeah, not that it's not worth seeing and not that there's not a lot of care put into it. But, you know, I think as we get to the more modern versions, like then we really start kicking out the jams.
Yeah. Same with me. I do think Rosano Brazzi is a decent, I would say, Professor Bear. I think that the men are better in this than 1933.
Oh, without question.
No. Yeah, for sure. So
but it's a low bar.
Yeah, fair. All right, we are bumping up many decades.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about the 1994 version. So I love this version. It came out when I was in high school. And so it was definitely a favorite of mine. And I think this version does so many things right. I love having two Amys. I think that every version should do that because I mean, even though I'm not like in love with Samantha Mathis's performance, I still just like, it just feels so weird to me to have a 20-year-old actress playing a little girl. It's just too weird for me. And so I like it better.
I think it's a good choice. I mean, when we get to the newest one, I can sort of say why I don't think you always have to do it. But I think that when Samantha Mathis doesn't get as much of a chance to make an impression because the earlier versions, you don't get a lot of adult Beth, and we'll talk about that when we get to the new one. And so she doesn't get to have the moments that Kirsten Dunst does.
Yeah,
but they're both terrific, and no, I adore this version too. I was very excited when it was coming out because, like, you know, Winona Ryder was like at peak Winona Ryderness at that point. And it's directed by Julian Armstrong, who directed two of my very favorite movies, My Brilliant Career and Starstruck, in Australia. And have you seen My Brilliant Career?
I haven't. I'd like to because she's done so few movies. I wish that she would do more.
I know. Yeah. She's, you know, been doing a lot of documentaries of late, but yeah, I think, you know, she was, you know, a woman director trying to get stuff made in Hollywood, and that's never an easy path. In fact, you could probably do it for your Criterion, show. But anyway, so my Brilliant Career is also about a young woman in, you know, she's in rural Australia, but basically, kind of in the poor side of a rich family. And she has this drive to be a writer, and so the two films I think dovetail into each other quite a bit. In fact, I think Armstrong at first didn't want to take the gig because she thought they were too similar, but was eventually kind of talked into it and came to understand that there was a lot of difference in the stories. And then of course had to do a lot of research into the American Civil War, which she didn't really know that much about because she's Australian. She's a she's a great director and a great director of actors. And so I think like you really see that with the ensemble here, like they're all just, you know, perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the casting is so strong in this movie. The only one that I'm not in love with is Susan Sarandon.
Really?
Yeah. Because she's just not a, like a nurturing mothery kind of actress, in my opinion. Like, I just guess I just, I don't know. I think that she's maybe a, I don't know, just want someone a little more ooey and gooey for the role of Marmee.
Cause I don't know. I think she is maybe a wiser Marmee. And so I think a lot of her like advice to her daughters and stuff, it come, you know, it's a little more deeper voice and it comes from a little more place of like experience. But I don't know. I still get that vibe from her of nurturing and of caring. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, you know, a lot of times with movies, we sort of forget like the toll that people's lives are taking on them. And so here's a woman who is like, her husband's off at war. The family has lost their fortune. She's got four daughters to raise. She's doing whatever kind of work outside of the house. She is, you know, doing like volunteer work for like the soldiers and that kind of thing. So like, I'm okay with a Marmee who maybe has like some dark circles under her eyes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so I don't hate it, but she's,
no, I get it.
She's not my, my favorite as far as, I don't know. I just, and the funny thing that we used to, my mother is a very, very nurturing mm-hmm. woman. Like she would be a great Marmee in, but we used to ask, we'd say, we say, Mom, why don't you have any great advice for us? Why don't you tell us? And she'd be like, I don't know. Just like, I have no idea. And that's because that's so Marmee. Like, I'm like, the perfect advice, the perfect speech to go with like this.
any given moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. and I'm sure she did have advice for us, but it was more, you know, obviously when your kids are like, give us this great advice. You never give us great advice.
But, yeah. I love Claire Danes as Beth, because nobody, I'll tell you, you know, we talked about Margaret O'Brien and June Allison. They did very good 1940s movie crying, but Claire Danes took movie crying to a whole new level. Like she was not afraid to ugly cry.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing her do it and like, whoa, that moment where she gets the piano just was devastating to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And just, I think that this by far does the Beth death scenes the best. I mean, I'm just, I'm a mess. It's so good. Now I get to go first, you know, that whole speech that she does. Oh,
right.
It's now I'm the one going ahead and it's so good. She's really good in it. I agree. And I love Mary Wicks as
God bless. Yes. Yeah. A legend. Like I love when you have like somebody from sort of golden age Hollywood who's still around and still, you know, capable. And so I'm really glad that in the final years of her life, like Mary Wicks got this and the Sister Act movies. And it's like, cause she's just one of those great character actresses going all the way back to the 40s. Like you see, like one of her very first screen appearances is now Voyager, and totally holding her own with Betty Davis, and like really funny and sassy and just all that great stuff. So yeah,
but of course, she's in White Christmas too.
She is indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. I love her. She's really funny. And what do you think of Christian Bale?
I think he's a pretty good Laurie actually, because I think he's, you know, we talked about that. He's got a sort of pivot between the sort of three phases of Laurie, I guess, you know, he has to be this kind of like, wide-eyed sort of boy ingenue practically. He has to be crushed by Joe's refusal to marry him and kind of be believable as sort of a wastrel for a while. And then he has to kind of bring it to put it together and like be the man for Amy. And I think, you know, in as much as all the movies, except for the new one, and we'll get to that, I think kind of rush some of that trajectory, I think he's pretty good in all these spots. And I know that, you know, for your generation, he's the Laurie they grew up with, and they will accept no substitutes. But yeah, how do you take?
Well, I do think it's one where you feel sort of more angry at Joe because he's so charming. You're like, what is wrong with you?
Right. Which also comes up in my brilliant career, because Sam Neill is like the rich guy who's like, I will let you write, I will support you, you know, and she's like, no, I got to do this myself. You know?
Yeah. Plus, I do think that he and Winona Ryder have a nice chemistry together.
Totally.
So I would be interested in seeing them do another film together. And I also think that that Eric Stoltz is the best John Brooke.
Mm, yes, true. Mm-hmm. That's yeah. That's an easy character to sort of like fade into the wallpaper.
Yeah. So I like that. I love the music in this movie. I think it's really good. Yeah. And
John Neville as Mr. Lawrence is really good too.
Mm, yeah. Thomas Newman score, I really like. I just think it's in the way they enter. I can't hear For the Beauty of the Earth without a church. So I'm like, oh, it go right back to Little Women. So the way they integrate hymns and stuff like that is really effective. And I also really like Gabriel Byrne in this.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
As Professor Bear. I think it makes sense. So you're less mad at her for
Yeah, no, this is where we really start sexing at Professor Bear. It's like, okay, you're going to say no to Christian Bale, but okay, understood.
Yeah. I think that it's just beautifully made. It's just, I love it. I love this movie. I think it's great. And so this is my favorite, my number one still.
This was my number one until this year, but it is now my number two.
Okay, good. All right. Well, let's talk about this new one then. Yes. So normally I am not a fan of nonlinear storytelling. Normally I find it very distracting and it's just harder to get involved in the story. Like something like Man of Steel, for instance, it really hurts it for me than a traditional narrative where it builds and, you know, up to our climactic event. But I think this might be a rare exception to the rule for me, because I think this movie, by far, of all the versions, makes you buy the Amy-Laurie dynamic.
Yes, thank you. This version, I think, really gives the other sisters more real estate. Like, everybody loves Joe and wants to follow Joe along, but they always kind of give the other three short shrift. And here, yes, we get those essential scenes that build the Amy Laurie relationship, so that when it actually happens, it's like, yes, this makes sense. It's not just this sort of weird contrivance that never, in as much as I love the other movies, it never completely plays for me, and it always feels just like he's settling for the other one, you know. Whereas this was like, no, they really are the match that was supposed to be all along. And I agree with you with the nonlinear. I think a lot of times when you start a story at the end or whatever, it's a sign of desperation, or like they don't really know what else to do with it, or it's like slapping a narration on. But because this is a story about a writer, and this is a story about the evolution of a writer, and of a writer discovering that it's her own past that is going to be her source material, I think having it told in flashback makes perfect sense. Because you begin with Joe in New York trying to be a writer, and then it's in her reminiscences about her childhood, about her sisters, about her family life growing up, that turn her into the author that she eventually becomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just think from the very beginning, you see that chemistry between Florence Pugh and Timothée Chalamet. So absolutely, you're not surprised at all. And it just, I don't know, it just makes it, because really in reality, Louisa May Alcott was totally like trolling her fans, like because it was originally two books, and everybody was writing her and saying, when are, you know, Laurie and Joe gonna get together, and she was just like, ugh. and so she wrote this, she's like, I'm gonna make her fall in love with some, you know, old professor. And so there are a lot of people that's a barrier for them in enjoying Little Women is, and I know our good friend Amber, that's, she's in that camp where she's.
Oh, is she?
Yes.
Well, I hope this new version makes sense for her, because, I mean, think about it. Laurie is like, He's rich. He is a member of society. Amy totally understands that world, knows how to be, like, publicly knows how to be his arm candy, but, like, privately knows how to be his equal and to sort of help him maneuver through those people and those settings. Joe is literary, and I think it makes sense for her to be with an academic, to be with somebody who can read her work and give her notes, which Bear does. He's the one person who tells her you're writing the wrong thing. So, like, especially in this version, I think those two pairings make total sense, and that's been a real dramatic sticking point, I think, for a lot of the adaptations, which is why I think this is the best one.
Yeah. And yeah, she really needs somebody who's more of a bohemian and as opposed to Amy. Yes. Doesn't really need that. And so I really liked Emma Watson in this movie. I'm normally kind of mixed on her. Mm-hmm. And I kind of admired her for taking, she's a big star, and she to take an ensemble role in a movie like this, I thought it was cool of her. And I thought she did a good job. And I liked the fact that the writing for her, I appreciated that it showed a different way to live your life as a woman, and that that was equally valid. Yeah. You know, that she, I just loved the line, and it's in the trailer and everything, but the, just because my choices are, my dreams are different than yours doesn't mean they're not important.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things that you will find a lot of times in sort of feminist discourse or literature where they'll say, look, if you want to be a housewife, be a housewife, that's great. But what we're about here is you having that choice and you deciding for yourself what it is you want to do with your life. And I think that a lot of times in adaptations of this book, because Meg is the domestic one, she is the one who chooses the home and the hearth and the children, it's hard to make that dramatically interesting. And I think this movie, Greta Gerwig writes these scenes where she is torn between wanting the material for the nice dress and wanting to have more ease and comfort in her life, but at the same time understanding that she has sacrificed certain things to be with the man she loves, to have children with the man she loves, even if that means living, at a different economic level. And that's an interesting story, and that's dramatic, and that is compelling, and it should be part of this story. And so again I think Gerwig really goes out of her way to be like, okay, you know the Joe trajectory, and it's fascinating, and we love her, and we want to see all the things that happen to her, but let's remember that Meg has a story, and Beth has a story, and Amy has a story. Even Beth, I think, gets more heft here as a person who lives life in a certain way that isn't the way that Joe lives it. And I love those scenes, like, you know, when they go to the beach and when they're, you know, when Joe is taking care of her, that she gets to be more than just like the two-dimensional, let's all be sad because perfect Beth has died, you know?
Yeah, I guess so. Beth is the one thing that, I mean, I think they definitely try to make her the youngest one in this one. And yes. I didn't think that the Beth death scene I thought it was kind of brushed over compared to Claire Danes. And
right. But I think Gerwig is that kind of filmmaker, though, where she's not gonna, like, she's not gonna, the strings are not gonna come welling up, you know, and it's not gonna be a big I think she's much more matter of fact and like, this is a thing that happens, and yes, it's sad, and how does it affect the other characters? But, you know, she's not going to sort of give it that kind of hazy golden glow. Another great score, by the way, in this one, I think, from Alexander Desplat.
He did a great job. And also, like, not using music at certain moments, I thought was very effective.
Yeah.
And and I also loved the costumes by Jacqueline Duren, who, of course, did Pride and Prejudice and many other films. I thought the costumes were really nice, were really pretty.
Yeah, and I think a thing you have to do with Little Women is that, like, they can't all be pretty. Like, you have to differentiate, like, you know, if the March sisters are struggling, those outfits have to be a little more threadbare, a little more, you know, like, patched together, so that when we, you know, when Meg goes to the fancy dress ball,
or when
Amy is in Paris with Aunt March, like, we appreciate the distinction of what those outfits look like.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I love Saoirse Ronan as Joe. I thought she was wonderful. And I mean, I've always been a huge fan of hers. I love Brooklyn.
It's
one of my favorites of the last few years. And I thought that she managed to get that dynamic of being independent without being irritating.
Yes, definitely. Again, I think that's looking at it through 2019 eyes, when I look at Hepburn's performance, as great an actress as she is, I really think she's overselling that aspect a little much. Mm-hmm. But you know,
I can see that.
It's very subjective.
Yeah, because we had had actually two versions of Little Women in 2018.
Right.
I was wanting a new good version. The problem I had with the PBS version in 2018 was I felt like they turned all four women into Joe. They were all kind of outspoken and all independent and all, mm-hmm. and that was their way of sort of modernizing it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like that. And Amy Angela Lansbury is great, but I was disappointed by it. And then the 2018 modernized version, which I'm open to. I'm not a traditionalist with adaptations.
Sure.
I was open to it, but I thought they made Joe so insufferable in that movie. I hated her.
I didn't see the Great Performances one or whatever the BBC PBS one. But yeah, I did see the Leah Thompson one. And yeah, I think the tricky thing about modernizing something like this is so much of the story is, as much as there's a universality to it and as much as there's an ongoing relevance to it, you know, the specifics of, like, if you're going to have like Amy burn Joe's novel out of spite, you know, then you're thinking, like, she doesn't have a backup.
That's true.
There's not a hard drive with this on it somewhere. You know, things like the little details like that. And yeah, I think overall it was sort of like well-intentioned, but just it made a lot of mistakes along
the way. It was one of my least favorite of the whole year last year. I hated, why is Meg making out with some guy in the school, and they made him homeschoolers for some reason, which I'm fine with, but like, I don't know. It was just some weird choices. And I it was the only version of this story that I've ever seen where I wanted Amy to burn that book. I just hated Joe. I thought she was the worst. So, I know, 'cause she was just so mean about her paintings being worthless. And I'm like, come on.
It was a little much.
Yeah.
All around. There's another one that's sort of contemporary that I haven't seen called, it's like the March Sisters at Christmas Time or something.
Is that the Lifetime one?
Oh, is it? Okay. I don't know.
I haven't seen it, so I don't know. But I've heard about it. What do you think of Timothée Chalamet as Laurie?
I think he's quite good. I'm constantly surprised by him as an actor. Like, I don't know if you saw The King on Netflix this year, but like, at first he feels miscast, but then you realize that's the whole point, is the idea of like this guy who was not really, you know, who doesn't seem like he should be the king because he's this sort of like drunken gadabout. It's basically the Henry IV story. Mm-hmm. But he sort of uses that to his advantage and allows people to underestimate him and then kind of takes advantage of that. And so I'm constantly surprised by him. I always think he's interesting. There is something that's always a little wispy about him in a way, and the best roles incorporate that and use that. And so when he sort of reaches the end of his trajectory, I do like how jealous he is of the existence of Professor Bear, even though he's like married to Amy now. When he finds out that there's a man interested in Joe, he's like, what? Huh? Who? Who's this? What? You know, like, he's very like, you know, he needs all the details. He's got to sign off on this guy, basically. But I think he's good. Florence Pugh, my favorite Amy. I agree with you about it does work to cast younger actress and older actress, but I think she's great. And I think that she really, it's easy to reduce Amy to her worst habits, but I felt like I got a more full picture of this person who is trying to, like, you know, wants to live her life a certain way, wants to meet certain standards. Yeah. And then as she gets older, comes to realize, like, what of that works and she can hang on to, and what was ridiculous.
Yeah, and she's just had an incredible year.
Yeah.
unbelievable. I mean, fighting with her family was such a pleasant surprise. Mm-hmm. This, and then The Midsommar, which I didn't see, but I've heard she's great.
You should. It's intense, but she's very good in it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I like I said, I think the nonlinear storytelling really helps a lot with her character. And I do think Timothy Chalamet, like, his hair is ridiculous. What is he not have that hair? He's like rollicking around the beach. I'm like, what is going on? But but yeah, they have a very young Professor Bear in this.
Yes.
Louis Garrel is his name.
Louis Garrel, great, kind of legendary French actor. He's been around for a while. He was in Bernardo Bertolucci's The Dreamers, which was like 15 years ago now, but still very young looking. And his father was a famous French filmmaker, so he's just sort of kind of been knocking around for a while. But yeah, great actor. It's funny, actually, Dave and I just did a podcast last night where we were talking about art house Christmas movies, and he's in a movie called Dans Paris that you might want to check out at some point. But it's an interesting holiday tale.
Oh, I'll look forward to that podcast. But yeah, and there's some other well-known actors in the movie. You have Bob Odenkirk as Mr. March Fearing, Chris Cooper as Mr. Lawrence.
He's great.
Yeah.
How did you like Laura Dern's Marmy?
See, I think that she's better than Susan Sarandon. Like, she has that modern sort of feel, but there's more warmth there for me.
Fair enough.
So I liked her. Do you like her?
I do. Yeah. I think she's terrific. And it's such a contrast. I don't know if you've watched Marriage Story yet, but, you know, very different character from Laura Dern.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as I like Susan Sarandon, I will say probably more warmth coming out of Laura Dern, for sure. And of course that, what's her face playing Aunt March? She's good too.
Yeah. It was kind of, I mean, I know that Meryl Streep is 70 years old, but I feel like this is the first time she's played like a legitimately old person. That was a little jarring for me at first.
It's funny how, like, you know, I think the way that women, certainly women who are on screen, age now is so different. Because, like, did you watch Feud on FX? The thing about the Joan Crawford, Betty Davis.
I heard about it, but I didn't watch it.
Well, it was your favorite Susan Sarandon and Jessica Lange playing Betty Davis and Joan Crawford, and they were actually like 15 to 20 years older than the people they were playing, but, you know, 65 for a working Hollywood actress now is 50 for the mid 60s, you know? And so, yeah, I think, you know, between perhaps a medical technique, but also just diet and exercise and that kind of thing, you know, working actresses tend to look younger, longer. So I'm sure to play this part, like, they had to kind of slap some, it's not like, oh, Meryl Streep takes off her foundation and that's what she looks like. I'm sure they had to put, you know, prosthetics on her to make her look that age.
Yeah. It was just surprising to me. I was like, whoa. I don't
know. Look, everybody used to die at 35, you know, it's a constantly evolving process.
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoyed the film. Like I said, for me, the Beth wasn't my favorite, but it wasn't awful. I didn't hate it.
She's fine. She doesn't stand out the way Claire Danes does.
Yeah. We were going to do our, you have this as number one.
Yeah, I do.
Right. I have it in number two, but I have a ton of nostalgia for 1994. I've only seen this one time. So it's a little unfair, but, we'll see what kind of where it lands.
We'll circle back on the next remake.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. So before we end, we were just going to do a little sort of dream casting of all these movies. What would be our cast? And so who would you cast as Marmy?
Of all the Marmies, probably Mary Astor, actually.
Yeah, same. Yeah, same with me. Yeah. So who would you cast as Joe?
I'm going to go Winona Ryder. I think that she strikes a good balance of the sort of obstreperousness of her, like the sort of like loud inappropriateness of Joe, but also the sort of sensitive writerly side. As much as I think, with the possible exception of June Allison, all of them have been terrific. That's the one I'd go with.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with Katharine Hepburn. It's my only 1933 one in my cast, but I don't know. I really like her kind of take on the role. So Then for Meg, who would you pick?
It's hard to say because, like, I think Trini Alvarado is really great in the 94 version, but yeah. I think that Emma Watson got more to do than any of the Megs. So I probably would have to go with Emma Watson just because we got more of a taste of what she could do with the character because they gave the character more depth.
Yeah. I mean, if this thing is a hit, I could actually see them doing another one and doing the little men kind of the, so their stories, cause there's two other books.
Right.
And that might be Joe's Boys and Little Men. Hmm. That might be kind of fun to see where they could go. But yeah, same with me. I pick Emma Watson as my Meg. So Beth, I bet we have the same one for this.
Oh, yeah, it's got to be Claire Danes.
Claire Danes.
No one cries like Claire Danes.
Yeah. So, and then Amy, in my dream world, I would pick Kirsten Dunst / Florence Pugh. That would be my dream world.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
That's actually, I had not considered that. But yeah, okay, I'll sign on for that.
Okay, good. okay, so who would be your Aunt March?
You know, no shade on Meryl or Mary Wicks, who are two of my favorites, but my one 1933 choice here is going to be Edna Mae Oliver because, whoa, what a battle axe.
Yeah, she's really good. That's true. I will pick Mary Wicks for Aunt March. And then finally, who would be your Lori?
I think Chalamet's great, but I'm going to go Christian Bale. I think he gets all the phases right.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Timothée Chalamet.
Ooh, okay.
In there, and it's partly because of that nonlinear storytelling that I think his choices just make more sense, and you get that chemistry with both Joe and Amy, which they never do. So there we go, we did it. So y'all listening will have to let us know once you get to see the new Little Women, what do you think of it? Do you like it, not like it? Would love to hear your thoughts.
It is my favorite movie of 2019.
Oh, really? Wow.
But yeah, if you don't like it, I won't take it personally.
No, it's up there for me as well. I really enjoyed it and I look forward to seeing it again. And I also got to see it with my sister who,
Oh great.
She lives in England. So she was in town and so that ended up being a really great day for me. So anyway, let us know what you think. And thank you so much, Alonzo, for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Always really a pleasure. Fun. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So where can people find you on your various podcasts and other things that you do?
If you want to follow me on Twitter at aduraldi, A-D-U-R-A-L-D-E. That's usually where I post links to pretty much everything. But you can read my reviews at thewrap.com, T-H-E-W-R-A-P. I am co-host of three podcasts. Linoleum Knife, which I do with my husband, Dave White, which we've been doing for a little over 9 years now. Who Shot Ya on the Maximum Fun Network. And Breakfast All Day, which reunites me with the team from the former What the Flick. And if you have not picked it up yet, there's still time to grab for this holiday season my holiday movie book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Yes, and we'll have all the link for all of that in the description section. So make sure you're following Alonzo. And thanks again. I really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Rachel. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. I'd like to thank Alonzo for coming on the podcast. It was so much fun to get to reconnect with him. And he's such great support to all that we do. We really appreciate it. So please follow the podcast at Hallmarkies Podcast and Hallmarkies Pod, all of our social media, iTunes, YouTube. If you are listening on iTunes, please give us your ratings and reviews. And if you're listening on YouTube, please give us a thumbs up, subscribe to the channel. We sure appreciate that as well. And consider becoming a patron of the channel. That helps us out so much. We so appreciate it. We also have our merch store that we'll have a link for in the description section. And you can follow me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. So make sure you check that out. And thanks again. Merry Christmas, you guys. And we'll talk again.